I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Today, we're going to take a break from covering pandemic news and related issues and devote some time to things to enjoy while hunkering at home. Coming up, comfort foods and TV shows worth binge-watching. But first, curling up with a good book. While book tours have been canceled, new books are still being published. And with nowhere to go, maybe now is the time to reread some classics or tackle that tome that's been gathering dust on the bookshelf. Our guest, Jumana Khatib, is editor and columnist for the New York Times book section, and she has some suggestions for us. And Jumana Khatib, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks so much. I'm always happy to talk books.
Well, I figured. And, you know, I was thinking about how I read, and I think for a lot of people, how we read at home. I mean, we read, you know, before we're going to bed or on a Saturday afternoon. And here we are all basically hunkering at home. I'm curious about how you are spending your day.
Well, it's a lot of that. You know, it's funny because reading is one of those sort of recreational or leisure activities that I think on its surface hasn't really been disrupted for the reasons that you say. You know, it's solitary, you do it at home, you don't need to be around other people to do it. But sort of anecdotally, and this is certainly true for me, I think a lot of us, our attention spans are elsewhere. You know, it's hard to sit and read with the full concentration that you might have in, you know, non-pandemic times. So, you know, for me, what that means on a day-to-day is that I'm here with my hundreds of books in my apartment and trying to figure out what's going to be the right one to sort of fit the mood. And so a lot of reading and just trying to take comfort in that, too.
Well, you actually sent us a couple of lists, and I want to go through them and just have you describe for us why you were reading them and perhaps why you think we should be. One is The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. Tell us about this book.
Oh, yeah. Well, so this is a great book that I hadn't read, and it's a couple years old. It's a National Book Award winner. It was one of our 10 best books for the book review a couple of years ago. And so it's sort of a two-part novel. The first part, which is where I am, I'm not done with it. It starts in the 1980s in Chicago, and it's sort of centered on a group of friends, and it's in the time of the AIDS crisis in the early years of that. And, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago when this was when this pandemic was beginning to pick up, a lot of readers were saying, okay, you know, I want to read about crazy biological sci-fi illness stories. And I wasn't quite there. I understood those readers who wanted those books. I wasn't one of them. But I've picked up The Great Believers, and it's very human. It's very well written, totally engaging. I'm finding it easy to get lost in that novel. But that's my first sort of illness-related book of the pandemic.
Well, let me add to that, because you and some of the other critics at the Times did come up with a list of pandemic novels. The Andromeda Strain, obviously, you know, who wouldn't think of that? Cold Storage, The Companions, which apparently is a new book, The End of October, The Mask of Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe, The Passage, The Plague, of course, by Albert Camus, Stephen King's The Stand, which is, what, 1,200 pages?
1,200 pages. So for anybody who wants to get lost in a long doorstop of a book, there's your answer.
Now, have you read, as you said, you weren't exactly in the mood 5 weeks ago. How about now? Are you in the mood to read this kind of stuff?
You know, I am still, this is an unfashionable thing to say maybe, but it's the truth, is that I still definitely read to kind of get out of my present scenario. Mm. And right now I'm sort of in this, I'm checking the news constantly, checking in on loved ones, checking in on everybody you know. So frankly, for me, it's been a relief to kind of read books that take me out of that.
Sure.
And I certainly understand the other viewpoint, but for me, it's been nice to sort of escape into some other, you know, very sensory books. There was one piece we did where we talked with some of our colleagues in the newsroom about sort of books that had stood the test of time that they came back to in times of crisis. And the first book that I picked up was a collection of MFK Fisher's food writing. And How to Cook a Wolf, for example, she wrote that in 1942, sort of the peak of World War II, shortages and despair. And it's this very, very pragmatic, well-written, kind of bracing book about how to sort of soldier on in a time of crisis. And of course, the food writing itself is amazing,
oh
and it
gosh,
really does
yeah.
sort of help take you outside of yourself. So,
well, we should say to our listeners, we'll be talking about food with a food writer, actually from the New York Times, a little bit later in the show. You talked about senses, and on your list, you included Alice Waters' Coming to My Senses. Why is that book on your list?
Oh, you know what? I mean, well, I live alone. And so one of the things that I'm trying to do is make sure that, of course, meal times are still regular and sort of have some order right. to the day in that. And I also am finding that memoir and these sort of very intimate kind of books are helpful. You know, it feels like somebody's sitting there talking to you. And I'd started Alice's memoir a couple years ago and hadn't finished it. So basically, this is detailing all the years leading up to when she founded Chez Panisse. And so right now I'm in the section where she's abroad, she's in France, she's slurping oysters in the Brittany coast, and you feel like you're there. And so that can be a welcome change of pace from Brooklyn, New York.
Well, I love I guess because I'm a voyeur to some degree, so I love memoirs and really enjoy reading them and have torn through a whole bunch in the last couple of years. Another a book on your list by Anita Bruckner, Hotel du Lac?
Yes. So that is a book that had been on my list forever. I had been on the library's waiting list for years for this book. I'm not exaggerating. And, you know, I came to the... And, you know, this is a Booker Prize winning novel, and it's, you know, I mentioned that my attention span is sort of feeling a little scattered, or so this hit the sweet spot of being about 200 pages, you know, very escapist. It follows this romance writer who goes to a Swiss hotel to sort of get a hold of herself and get her professional and personal life in order. And of course, there's a fascinating cast of characters, and it's a perfect setup, and it's a great way to sort of, it's a great story to lose yourself in.
Anything trashy? I mean, truly trashy that you could recommend to us
that
might not make it to the New York Times?
That might not make, you know what? I try not to judge anybody's reading habits.
Especially
you
now,
know,
right?
Romance, pulp, whatever you want. If you're reading, I think it's fine.
You also, and we're going to be talking a bit about the Tiger King a little bit later on, and let me just hold on to that thought and get something. There are books being published. You and others at the Times had 7 books for the month of April. Here we are in the month of April, and I do know that some book tours have been canceled, but nonetheless, there are new books coming out. Julia Alvarez's new book, I think it's been something like 14 years since her last book, and it's called Afterlife, and I guess greatly anticipated.
Yeah. You know, she has such a cult following. She's the author of In the Time of Butterflies and How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents. She's a real figure. And, you know, I think any time that a long-respected author has 10 years in between her last, you know, more than 10 years between her last book and her new book, there's a lot of anticipation building.
Yeah.
This one I haven't read, but I can't wait to get my hands on it. It's about a professor who's widowed, and then all of a sudden this pregnant teenager shows up on her doorstep, and it sort of throws the whole story on its axis. And it sounds very exciting, and it got a very, very positive review.
Well, as we all know, I mean, this pandemic has affected so many people, so many businesses in so many ways. How about the publishing business? On the one hand, maybe people are actually reading more books, but at the same time, authors are not going on book tours. How is the publishing industry faring through this time?
Yeah, you know, publishing certainly, from my understanding, has not been spared. Of course, my heart goes out to especially debut writers who had probably worked for years on their first book. And then all of a sudden you can't do any of the sort of celebratory activities, you know, can't go on tour, you can't do readings, or it just throws everything into chaos. You know, there have been some reports of smaller publishers who have furloughed employees or had some layoffs. A lot of bookstores are closed. Frankly, the whole industry seems to be in a period of uncertainty, just like so many other industries. And a lot of books, you know, it's hard to even know what books are going to be coming out when. I think publishers are making some really tough decisions about pushing back the release dates of some really anticipated books. It sounds like even some into next year.
Wow.
This is something that I don't think the industry could have ever imagined and certainly has ever had to grapple with. So we're in really new territory.
I mentioned Tiger King, and we're going to be talking about TV shows in just a couple of minutes. Looks like you watched mm-hmm. that on Netflix, but you also had some book recommendations for people who are either fans or kind of obsessed with this show. Can you share some of those titles with us?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I think that this show hits such a sweet spot. You know, you have the sort of zany crime, you have these larger than life characters. So sort of for anybody, whatever angle interests you most about this show, there is going to be a ton of books that will sort of satisfy you. So one of the colleagues I worked with on this list, you know, she's a total repository for every true crime book, it sounds like, that's been written. So she had one suggestion right away, which is The Falcon Thief, which I believe is a pretty recent book. And it follows this wild bird trafficker and smuggler. And he does these crazy, crazy things to get these birds. You know, he's dangling 700 feet from a helicopter to steal eggs. I mean, it's insane. It's something I would never dream of doing. And it's very well written and very, you know, very much puts you there. I think on the other hand, you know, one of my first thoughts when I was getting to know Joe Exotic and this cast of characters was like, oh, my God, these people sound like T.C. Boyle characters, you know.
Oh my gosh, right.
And so there's a story collection by T.C. Boyle, who you might know as the author of Talk Talk and some other books. So he has a short story collection called Tooth and Claw, and the title tells you pretty much everything you need to know. There's a biologist who's a little off her rocker. There are some scenes in Florida where a man's property is, you know, hit by plagues, and there's even a big African cat who manages to spray a character's bedroom with raw meat.
Wow. Well, we will put all of these on our lists. Jumana Khatib, thank you so much for joining us, getting our conversation started. Really appreciate it.
Oh, yes. Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great to chat.
Nice to talk to you, especially about books. And she is editor and columnist for the New York Times book section. And we're going to take a very short break, and we'll be talking about some of the TV shows that you might want to watch while we are all hunkering at home. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. We want to share these ideas together during the show today. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Marty Moscoena, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I don't know about you, but I've been watching more TV since hunkering at home, and it's a good thing we live in the golden age since there are so many terrific shows and movies to watch. I missed the first seasons of Ozark and Better Call Saul and am enjoying, if you can put it that way, the latest seasons of both. I binge-watched Unorthodox and Babylon Berlin and discovered a show on FX called Dave. I have not watched Tiger King like most of America. We asked Sonia Saraya to join us once again to talk about the TV shows that she would recommend while we are all under stay-at-home orders. She is television critic for Vanity Fair. And Sonia, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks.
You're very welcome. So what have you been watching recently?
Well, literally, I decided to start watching Lost for the first time because for some reason I'd never gotten around to it.
Well, that'll keep you busy for a couple of months, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, trying to untangle some mysteries. But yeah, I thought a lot about what's good viewing right now because we're in such a weird time. Everyone's at home, I feel like, kind of piled on top of each other if you have your kids at home, too. And there's sort of a pervasive sense of you know, a little bit of anxiety. I mean, it can range how much anxiety you're feeling. But I was like, what's like the right like viewing for that environment? So I came up with a bunch of different ideas.
Which you sent to us, and I certainly do appreciate that. Let me ask you, though, because we're going to be talking about what we call comfort foods in the third segment of the show. Are there things you think that are comfort TV or comfort movies that are on TV, perhaps stuff that we watched as kids growing up?
Oh, that's like totally a thing. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I like that I also watched some of during this time is the Great British Baking Show, which is the which is called The Great British Bake Off in the UK. It's on Netflix, and it's you know, it became popular a few years ago as a just a reality show based in Britain with a bunch of really earnest bakers trying to bake the best cakes and rolls and yeasty things. I feel like everyone's been baking right now. Like quarantine baking is very hot right now, and it's the most comforting show. It's just everyone's really committed to creating baked goods for their loved ones. It's a really heartwarming show.
Not a lot of yelling going on, yelling at people going on, even though it is a competition.
Yeah.
I've watched it a couple of times, and I'm just struck with just the pastel colors. There's something so unreal about the way it looks.
Yeah, it's homey, the whole thing.
Absolutely. Well, let me play. You sent us a list, and I want to start off with Schitt's Creek, and I should say to our listeners, that's spelled S-C-H-I-T-T. And this is from season six. This is David Rose. He's played by Daniel Levy. He's embarrassed that he has actually peed the bed. He shares with his fiancé, Patrick, who is played by Noah Reed. Let's play this clip, and then we'll talk with our guest about why this show is so delightful.
Listen, David.
Yeah, you know what? Can we just not?
Well, I think it's important that we do.
Oh, my God.
Look, things happen.
Yes, things happen. Things happen all in your sheets. And now you need to remake your little bed because I peed in it.
David, there is absolutely nothing to be ashamed of, okay? And look, I found this blanket that I thought I had lost in the laundry room. So you've actually done me a favor.
Hmm.
So maybe we can, take divorce off the table?
Maybe. But if the tables were turned, I can't say I'd be as generous.
Understood.
What is that noise?
I don't know. Maybe the sheets are a bit stiff.
No, it's like a crinkling sound.
I think you're probably just sitting on the mattress tag.
Is this a mattress protector?
No. No, that's a second sheet that you put on the mattress that my mom gave me when I moved in, so I just...
You put down a plastic sheet?
Well, I don't think it's I mean, it might have like a rubberized coating, but
oh,
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Purely coincidental.
Purely coincidental.
Okay, look, I just wanted you to be comfortable in case it happened again. God, come on, David, it's an expensive mattress.
More expensive than my dignity?
I mean, comfortable, at least.
Wow. Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Talk about being dropped in the middle of a show there. Sonia, I know that this show has a huge following. People really love it. Tell us why this is on your list.
So Schitt's Creek is a Canadian sitcom. It stars Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, comedy legends, as the two parents of this very rich family that loses everything and has to start over in a small town called Schitt's Creek. They bought it as a joke because they thought the name was funny. So the show is really about these four people, and who we heard in the clip was their son, David, who is in real life also Eugene Levy's son and the showrunner of the show.
His name
is Dan Levy. Yeah. So that's great. The show was his brainchild, and as you can see, they're very fussy. They're very silly. They've had very sheltered lives, and then when they come to this small town, they have to learn how to be neighborly and nice. And there's something about it that's just really, it's really funny because they are so outrageous. I mean, Catherine O'Hara is amazing in this show.
I love her.
But it's also so heartwarming and it's about community because they end up sort of trying to create new lives for themselves and really committing to it. And the people of the town come around them. And it's a slow process, but that's great because there's six seasons to watch, so you can go right through it.
Take your time. Let me read an email from Ellen who said, my partner and I are binge-watching Schitt's Creek. Our goal is to watch all six seasons by Tuesday so that we can watch the series finale live. It's been our watch list for a while, but we never got to it. Now it's turned out to be the perfect escape. And it sounds like, Sonia, you would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Our engineer, Charlie Kyer, suggests a Spanish drama called Money Heist. It's on Netflix. Do you know anything about that, Sonia?
No, I don't. Tell me more.
Well, that's from our engineer, Charlie. And I'm home. He's 30 miles away in our station. So if he wants to send me a note, I will certainly read that. Let me just reintroduce you. And that's Sonia Soraya. And again, she is television critic for Vanity Fair. Our guest in today's show, we are spending each segment of the show first talking about books, now TV, and then we'll be talking about cooking at the very end of the show. And if you want to share some of the ideas, some of the shows that you have enjoyed on TV, especially recently during these difficult times, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Let me play a clip from another show that you sent to us. This is season 4 of Better Things. Sam Fox is played by Pamela Adlon, and here she is visiting her doctor. Let's give it a listen and then we'll talk.
Your muscles have atrophied.
Jesus. Well, what about physical therapy?
Won't help. Listen, I'm a surgeon. I would love to go in there and cut, but your hand could wind up like this.
Well, what about all the patient testimonials in the waiting room? How am I supposed to function without opposable thumbs?
I'm sorry, Sam. The technology just isn't here for what you've got yet. You are a lot younger than your hands.
Jesus. That's the first time in forever anyone ever said I was young.
She's great, Pamela Adlon. Tell us about Better Things.
So Pamela Adlon is the creator, the writer, the director, and the star. It's a art. It's one of the very contemporary, auteur-driven half-hour shows. She is a single mother who is working as an actress, raising three girls on her own, and then also taking care of her mother, who's aging and beginning to have some dementia, and she lives across the street. So their house is kind of overrun constantly with her children's friends and her own friends, and there's always dinner preparations. They're always in the middle of cooking dinner. What I really love about this show is it's just so human. It's a chronicle of what she struggles with, but it's also so it also channels how rewarding she finds raising her children and being with her family and how much she loves them, even when things are very difficult with them. And I think it's just beautifully shot. It's beautifully written, and it's just like a little. Every episode feels like a little treat. And I think that for your listeners who don't want to necessarily who might like watching a few episodes at a time instead of watching the entire season of something, or like want to savor something over a few days or weeks, this is perfect for that because it's just every episode feels like its own like complete little package, and it's really transporting to Los Angeles and to the really cozy environment of her world.
Yeah, you wrote a review a couple of years ago where you described it about that it was about the, quote, bittersweet indignities of parenting. And I thought that was a lovely turn of phrase, actually. Let me ask you about Dave. I don't know if you've watched that or not. Actually, our son suggested we check it out, and we were completely enthralled. This is a guy that grew up in the Philadelphia area who believes he's the best rapper in the world, or certainly is on a path to try to be the best rapper in the world. And all the character, he's kind of Larry David-esque, but not so nasty. And all the characters around him are so endearing, and the writing is so good. And I don't know whether you've seen that or not, Sonia.
I haven't seen it yet, but it's got such an interesting pedigree. Kevin Hart is one of the executive producers. Skeeter Born is involved. It has a real pedigree.
Yeah. Yeah, and stars this guy named Dave Bird, again, who grew up in the Philadelphia area, just to give a little plug here. Here's an email from Patrick who says, I've been watching The Circle on Netflix lately. It's mindless but entertaining, and the characters are great. Do you know The Circle?
Yeah, it's become a craze.
I feel like. Really? I miss that craze.
I don't remember exactly. It's a dating show, I think. Is this the tech company called The Circle with an agenda that will change the lives of humanity? What's great about Netflix is that, I'm sorry.
I love that you're figuring all this out on the air. Now, go ahead, Sonia.
I know. There's so many shows on Netflix in particular. But yeah, no, The Circle is it's sort of like a Big Brother thing where they have to, they're all isolated in an apartment, and the only way they communicate is through the social media platform called The Circle. Uh-huh. Which is like very relatable to right now.
Absolutely.
And I've been hearing from viewers who have been really, really involved in that show. Yes.
Someone emailed us Madam Secretary. That's a show that's been on TV for a while, right?
Yeah. That's Taya Leone as the Secretary of State. It's a CBS show.
You also suggested this show. Again, I haven't seen any of the shows that you suggested. I'll just put it out there for you, but that's why you're on. This is Nathan for You.
It's on choose things off the beaten path.
No, I certainly appreciate that. Nathan for You, it's on Comedy Central. It's by this Canadian comic, I guess, or stand-up comic, Nathan Fiedler. He's the host. What is this show about?
So Nathan for You is one of the most interesting shows that has it's because it's such a strange concept. It's a mockumentary in a way, but it's also like a reality show in a way, because Nathan Fiedler is a comedian. He says at the beginning that he went to a business school and got okay grades. But what he does is go to real life businesses and they're looking for some way to like draw more customers or appeal to a new demographic, and he goes to them and comes up with often the most nonsensical and inefficient solution to their problem, and then like spends all of the resources of the show to like make that thing happen. It goes in just amazing directions. Like, he comes up with these ridiculous ideas, and sometimes you're like, I don't think that a hotel should have a privacy pod in the middle of the lobby for people to go, do whatever they want to in it. But like, he's gonna put it in this hotel and see what happens anyway. And you're like fascinated, and you kind of have to keep watching. And there's one episode at the end of season three where it starts out with him kind of pitching an idea and ends up becoming this like cross-country trip with a man to find the long lost love of his life. Because the show has the reality element of like anything could happen at any time. There's something really interesting about it. And it's a little bit about like dysfunction, like a little bit about like dysfunctional American corporate culture, because there's a little bit of just like, well, what could we do to make money? Maybe we could do this. And then also, like, at times can be very, very human and very, very touching about trying to connect with people in this landscape. It's a very interesting show, and you can stream it on Hulu.
Here's a tweet from Mary. She says, I've been watching the BBC Historic Farm series. I've watched them a few months ago and have been returning to them when I need something calm but entertaining. It seems the British seem to know how to come up with calm but entertaining shows.
If the Historic Farm show is what I'm thinking about, I believe the woman who hosts it, like, lives as a Victorian on her farm and, like, tends to the farm in a Victorian way, like, with a corset on, she feeds the pigs. How could you not be obsessed?
Let me ask you about this Tiger King phenomenon. I haven't logged on to it just because I don't want to see tigers in cages by the roadside. And I mean, I have a thing for animals, I have to say. But have you watched it, and what do you make of this phenomenon?
I am in the same boat as you, which is that I was like, so you're saying the tiger's in cages. Like, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah,
but what's funny is that I grew up very close to one of the tiger preserves that is mentioned. I read the New York Magazine profile of the two people who are in the show. They are fascinating. It's a fascinating topic. The big cat world draws really personalities, and I think that's what really drew people to the show.
Yeah.
And now the Joe Exotic, who was maybe the primary really interesting figure in Tiger King, is going to get another show.
Oh my gosh!
Because that's how much interest there was in him. Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Sonia Saraya. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. And she's TV critic for Vanity Fair. Melissa Clark, waiting in the wings. She writes about food for the New York Times. We'll be talking about comfort food in these difficult times. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do you have any recipes you want to share? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowena, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We've been talking about how to make staying at home orders more enjoyable, what to read, what to watch, and finally, what to cook. It can be a challenge to come up with tasty meals three times a day when limiting trips to the supermarket. Our guest, Melissa Clark, has a lot of ideas. She writes a good appetite column for the New York Times and started the From the Pantry column a few weeks ago about staples to get us through this pandemic. And she has a new cookbook. It's called Dinner in French, My Recipes by Way of France. And Melissa Clark, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what's for dinner tonight? What are your plans?
You know, I was just talking about that with my husband and daughter. We were trying to figure out it's a different rhythm, you know, for me, for my family, and for everyone else's. So, you know, I'm trying to get them involved in the process. So, and hopefully get them cooking with me as well, which has actually been really fun. So tonight, I think I'm going to defrost some chicken, which I actually have to get on. I have to pull it out of the freezer.
After the show.
Yeah, exactly. I have some chicken thighs in there, and I'm going to do a really simple marinade. I'll probably throw together some soy sauce. I've got some ginger in the fridge, ginger root, garlic, a little bit of honey, maybe some sesame oil, and just do a sort of Asian style, simple marinated chicken. And then I'll bake it for a long time on a sheet pan, and I'll probably add some vegetables to that as well so that everything can cook together. I know I have broccoli, so I'll probably cut that up into florets and throw that right on the same pan. Really simple.
Simple and sounds delicious. How do you think about comfort food? And I think I would include this as well, is that I'm kind of a hankering for mashed potatoes and for pasta and for rice, for these sort of carbohydrate foods. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like we all, you know, we need the comfort right now, and we need to listen to our bodies, and it's okay. You know, even though we are, you know, maybe we're not moving as much as we would like to be, I think right now, if we want to have a big bowl of mashed potatoes, you know, that is perfectly fine. One thing I would like to, you know, to point out to people, because, you know, I've gotten a lot of reader response to my pantry column, and the majority of people are excited, but some people say, you know, there's a lot of comfort food, just like you said, there's a lot of, you know, carb heavy, heavy stuff. And I'm, you know, I'm worried about gaining the COVID-19, but the fact is, we're cooking everything from scratch these days, and I think most people are cooking more than ever. There's nothing more, you know, more healthful than cooking at home. So you are not eating at restaurants. You're not eating a lot. You're probably eating a lot more healthfully than you usually do. There are no office donuts hanging around. I know that we have a big, you know, there's a lot of candy around our, my office that I'm not eating. So I feel like if you want the mashed potatoes, eat the mashed potatoes. It's fine. You've made them yourself.
I love that advice. That's terrific. You know what I've also noticed is that friends and family, frankly, my daughter-in-law and I have been trading recipes because we both love food. We both love cooking, and we both, frankly, like talking about food and cooking. And I see a lot more of just conversations about food that are taking place because it feels good.
Yeah. I mean, it is a joy that we have every day. Right now, you know, things are scary and tense, but three meals a day, whether you are by yourself or you're with your family, I really believe in sitting down together or sitting down even by yourself, just making the time, carving it out, and setting a nice table, you know, even if that just means, you know, like actually sitting at a table, you know, as opposed to the couch and like, you know, having the ceremony of having the meal, like, okay, this is my meal time and this is, I'm going to enjoy this and pay attention to it. I think that is a way to nourish ourselves emotionally as well as physically.
We shouldn't be going to the supermarket, you know, every day or every other day. We should really time those visits. But you talk about pantry. What are some staples that we should just make sure that we always have on hand?
You know, it depends on what you like to cook, but I can give you my pantry staples, which are garlic, lemons, olive oil, Parmesan cheese, anchovies, and sardines. And then, of course, you know, you need to have your so you have, those are all your seasonings, and then you need to have the things that you use those seasonings on. So obviously pasta and rice. Beans, we've talked about beans a lot. The conversation, I've never heard so many people talk, tweet, Instagram about beans in my life. So this is good because beans are delicious.
They are.
And then, you know, for us, you know, as far as fresh vegetables go, things last a lot longer than we think they will. You know, I mean, I have lettuce in the fridge, and whenever I get, you know, I'm trying to go to the supermarket just once a week and to the farmer's market, which is great because it's outdoors. So it feels a little less cramped than the supermarket, which is nice. And if you wash your greens and you put them in a container or a bag in the fridge, they'll last for at least a week, maybe even two. So stock up on healthful greens and vegetables. Right now, I know that you can get great, you know, radishes and carrots, and celery lasts forever. Oh my God, how long has that bag of celery been in your fridge? So stock up on this stuff, and then you'll always have something fresh and green when you need it.
You know, even before I knew I was going to interview you, I tried your vegetarian skillet chili. And let me give
good.
A shout out. It was so simple and so tasty. And I love the pickled onions on, I forget exactly what it was, but there was something pickled that went on top. And it just was a nice little something, a little piquant to sort of finish off the taste.
That's actually a great thing to have in your fridge. We actually always, we've been keeping pickled onions going in the fridge since, you know, since the whole pandemic started, and it's been great because they add just they add that brightness. So even if we're just having, you know, some like toast with anchovies, or we're having, you know, even just, you know, toast with cream cheese, I will throw some pickled onions on and it immediately lifts it up. And it's the easiest thing to make. You slice up a shallot or an onion or some, whatever you have, or even some leeks, pinch of salt, pinch of sugar, and then you sprinkle some acid on top of it. So I use lime juice or lemon juice, but you could use apple cider vinegar, and you let it sit at room temperature for 20 minutes, and that's it. Throw them in the fridge. They will be there. They'll keep for weeks.
Let's talk about snacks, and you have a recipe for smoky nutty popcorn, which sounds really good. How do you make that?
Oh my gosh. So we love popcorn in this house. We eat so much popcorn. Just because, you know, it's funny, my daughter got braces and she was like, oh no, this is the end of popcorn. But no, she has figured out how to eat popcorn with her braces and all is well. So this one is a little different. You know, normally my standard popcorn, I take about a third of a cup of oil, and I heat it up in a big heavy pot with 3 popcorn kernels, and you cover it. And then as soon as you hear those kernels pop, then I will add 1/2 cup of popcorn. So about 1/3 cup of oil to 1/2 cup of popcorn is my happy place. And you cover the pot, but you leave a crack open. And that's really important because you want the steam to escape. And that way the popcorn stays nice and crunchy. So just make sure to face that away from you. And then when the popping dies down, so you add the popcorn, you lower the heat, and then it usually takes 5 or 6 minutes for all the popcorn to pop. I mix it in a bowl. I always use nutritional yeast. I love popcorn with nutritional yeast. Have you ever done that, Marty?
I haven't.
It's like that cheesy flavor, but there's no cheese in it. It just has this umami thing going on, and it's salty, and then, you know, plus you heighten it with a little more salt, and you toss that together. And because I use a pretty high amount of oil for my popcorn, I don't need to add any more fat. Like, it's sort of, it comes out kind of shiny. And I just toss the salt and the nutritional yeast in. And then, so for this recipe, that's my standard. And then for this recipe, I added smoked paprika and a little bit of cumin. And then I added almonds, which was so nice because then you had another kind of crunch in there. You know, aside from the crunch of the popcorn, you had the nut crunch. So I think I used almonds. I've used cashews in the past, which are great. You could use pecans, just chop them up and throw them in the bowl. And they also just give you a slightly, so it's a different texture and a slightly different flavor in the mix as well.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Melissa Clark, and she is a food columnist for The New York Times. She actually has a new cookbook coming out or is out called Dinner in French, My Recipes by Way of France, and I do want to get to that. But let me just make sure our listeners know how to join our conversation. Any questions or comments for our guest, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at @whyyradiotimes. You mentioned earlier about cooking with your child or your whole family, trying to make this a family experience. Are there certain kind of recipes you think that are just super kid friendly?
You know, I think, yes, for sure. I definitely think you want, you know, for kids, you know, kids, first of all, they could do a lot more than they maybe will let on. At least, you know, I know my daughter is watching me and doing, and she's very capable, but she kind of wants me to take charge. So when I put her on the spot, she always comes through. So I would say, you know, challenge the kids a little bit, you know, maybe, you know, working with them, maybe do something a little more challenging. This is a time when we are in the kitchen with our kids more than ever, and it's a good time to encourage them, you know. But some great recipes for kids, anything they want to eat, they should learn how to cook. This is how we do it in my house. You know, if Dahlia wants, my daughter's 11, her name is Dahlia, and if she wants, you know, if she has a craving, Mommy, why don't you make so-and-so? I say, well, let's make it together. And luckily, she loves to make. She already knows how to make salad. She will make our salad for the family. She loves salad, which is great for an 11-year-old. She's very adept at all kinds of cookies and eating the cookie dough. But I really think that, you know, kids should learn how to make the foods they like. We're working on teaching her how to make different pastas right now. She loves pasta with, you know, garlic and Parmesan and crunchy breadcrumbs that we saute in oil.
Perfect.
So,
yep.
Yeah. So she's learning how to make that. So, you know, definitely that's the incentive is if they want quesadillas. She is nailing the quesadilla. I have a quesadilla thing that I do where I let the cheese seep out into the pan and it gets crunchy. And she has mastered that.
It must be amazing to have you as a mom and a cook at home together. I was also thinking that, and there are things that I haven't really mastered yet. And I think, you know, I do have a little time. I mean, it feels like I have time, but I don't have time at the same time. But it seems like a good time to, you know, try that thing that has been on your list to do that you just haven't had time to do or haven't had the nerve to do.
Yeah, now's the time. I mean, plus you're not having people over, right? So
right.
It's just
you
your
can
family
make a big
if you
mistake.
Mess it up. Exactly. Good time for kitchen experimentation.
Right, exactly. Well, let's talk a little bit about your book, Dinner in French, My Recipes by Way of France. And I read an excerpt, it was in the New York Times, where you say, look, I'm not fluent in speaking French, but I am fluent in cooking French. And it seems like your parents and trips to Europe and trips to France had just a huge impact on your palate and I guess your way of thinking about cooking and your way around the kitchen.
Absolutely. You know, when I was growing up, I had a crazy childhood. We went to France every summer. My parents were very ahead of their time. We did house exchanges back before the internet. You know, now we think of Airbnb and everybody's exchanging houses. But this was in the 80s, and you had to write letters to people. They would type letters out on blue onion skin air mailers. We would mail these letters to France and then just hope to get letters back. It was so crazy, but it worked. And we stayed, it was a way for a family of four to travel to France. And we stayed for every August in a different part of the country. And, you know, my parents were psychiatrists. So they had August off. So we were able to go because that's sort of what you did back then. But what was so great about being in France with them is that they didn't cook with us during the rest of the year because they worked pretty late into the evening. They saw patients until like 9 o'clock. So they would cook later. But in France, we all cook together. So I always say I learned how to cook in France. And cooking French food with French ingredients with that sensibility of using really seasonal ingredients was exactly how I grew up. And it's not something I'd really written about before. But one thing I think it's important to note about the book is that my French cooking isn't fancy chef's French cooking because that's not what we cooked. It's the cooking of what French people make every night for dinner. You know, regular French people cook dinner every night for their families, and that is my inspiration here. Super simple, fresh, delicious food that, you know, I'm very practical. You know, I have this very practical Brooklyn nature that I, you know, so everything is simple. I try to use a few pots and pans. I don't want to mess at the end of it, but yet the flavors are distinctly French.
There was a nice quote there. I don't know whether this is something you said as a little girl, but in describing your time in France, first we would get lost and then we would have lunch, which is a great way to think about a childhood. But you say that's kind of how you think about how you navigate your kitchen and how you think about food, getting lost and then having lunch.
Yeah. So I think, like you were just saying, experimenting in the kitchen, you know, that you have the urge. That's exactly how I love to cook. I love to come up with an idea and then meander down a path. And maybe the idea turns out to be crazy and it doesn't work, but inevitably it leads me somewhere. I talk about it in the intro. There was this one recipe where I had it in my head that I wanted to make, Gruyère. So those are those little fluffy cheese puffs, you know, the crunchy, fluffy French cheese puffs that I love. And I was like, what if I use some harissa paste, which is this North African spice paste, and make them spicy? And it didn't work, and it didn't work, and it didn't work. But finally, I got to a place where I was like, wait, why don't I just try that with, I'll cross a souffle, French souffle, with an American cornmeal spoon bread, you know, those like fluffy casserole spoon breads.
Sure.
And then I'll add harissa to that. And that was perfect because the sweetness of the corn balanced out the spiciness of the red pepper paste. So it all just worked out. And it was, if I hadn't gotten lost, I never would have gotten there.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Melissa Clark, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Oh, thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. And she's a food columnist for the New York Times. Charlie Kyer, the engineer for today's edition of the show, and it's produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. We do want to close things out with Linda McCartney's Cook of the House from her 1998 album, Wild Prairie. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thanks for joining us.